This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Center for Astrophysics. For the full show and archives, visit jodcast.net.
Welcome, Dr. Alessandro Navarini. We are happy to have you today for the Jodcast. We would like to know about your visit to Jodrell Bank.
I'm with the INAF, the Italian National Institute for Astrophysics at the Cagliari Astronomy Observatory, here for a collaboration with the Jodrell Bank Observatory to work on a phased array feed instrument named PHAROS, which is an acronym for Phased Arrays for Reflector Observing Systems. PHAROS was developed in the framework of an European collaboration aiming at producing affordable, low-noise phased array to be installed in the focal plane of large radio telescopes. Indeed, phased array feed receiver systems are one of the key technologies for the future of radio astronomy.
Could you like to tell us a little more about what are phased array feeds?
Yes, so they are a type of focal plane array in which antenna elements are closely spaced so that they do not act independently, but instead act as a sensors of the electromagnetic field across the plane of the telescope. The outputs of the receivers are then coherently combined in a beamformer with appropriate weights to synthesize several discrete beams which can be steered electronically. So therefore, by collecting and then manipulating the entire field, electric field in telescope focal plane, such arrays can simultaneously offer improvements in the efficiency of existing radio telescopes and open up the widest possible field of view. The beam properties can be manipulated electronically and made to adapt to the optics of any radio telescope by synthesizing multiple simultaneous beams on the sky for complete coverage of the available field of view without loss of sensitivity in each beam. As a result, the service speed figure of merit is expected to increase dramatically. That's why the phased array feed technology is one of the technologies currently under investigation for the next world largest radio telescope, the Square Kilometer Array, known as SKA.
Wonderful. Would you like to tell us why you are likely to test this instrument before it's used in the Jodrell Bank telescope?
Yeah, so for one of my near-term goals is to help testing the PHAROS phased array feed. This is a cryogenic instrument designed to operate across the 4 to 8 GHz band that we name C-band, which is going to be installed in Lovell telescope, the Lovell 76 meter diameter radio telescope. And in addition, I would like to contribute to develop a second generation of such instrument, which could possibly be deployed in the SRT, which is an acronym for the Sardinia Radio Telescope.
Dr. Alessandro Navarini, would you like to also tell us what is the Sardinia Radio Telescope?
Yeah, so the Sardinia Radio Telescope is a new Italian facility for radio astronomy that has recently started an early science program. The antenna is a fully steerable wheel and track dish with a 64 meter in diameter, located 35 kilometers north of Cagliari on the Sardinia Island. The telescope completes a set of three antennas devoted to radioastronomical science in Italy, and all are managed by the Italian National Institute for Astrophysics, INAF. The other two antennas are the 32-meter dish in Medicina, near Bologna, in central Italy, and the 32-meter dish in Noto, in Sicily. The SRT is a general-purpose radio telescope aimed at operating with a high aperture efficiency, and once all the planned receivers are installed, it will observe in the frequency range from 300 MHz to approximately 100 GHz and beyond. It means from approximately 1 meter and to 3 millimeter in wavelengths. The SRT is capable of hosting many microwave receivers located in four different antenna focal positions, the primary, the secondary, and the two beamwave guide focal points. And it will be able to cover almost continuously this frequency range. The SRT will operate in single dish, continuum, full stokes, and spectroscopy, very large baseline interferometry, the VLBI mode, and also the space science modes. Thanks to its large aperture and versatility, which means multi-frequency agility and wide frequency coverage, the SRT is expected to have a major impact in a wide range of scientific areas for many years to come. A key feature of the SRT is its active surface, total composed by over 1,000 electromechanical actuators, which are able to correct the deformations induced by gravity on the primary surface.
Would you like to also tell us how important this telescope is going to be in the scientific observations?
So the operations in the framework of international BLBI and pulsar timing networks are of top priority for the SRT. The SRT is going to be one of the most sensitive European BLBI network, EVN stations, together with the Effersberg and the Jodelbank. Its large aperture is also of extreme importance for the space BLBI observations with Radio Astron. The SRT is expected to have a major impact also for single-dish observations. In particular, we aim at exploiting its capability to operate with a high efficiency at high radio frequency. It will be equipped with multi-feed receivers, and it can play a major role in conducting wide-area surveys of the sky in a frequency range essentially between 20 and 90 gigahertz, which is poorly explored, yet very interesting. For instance, the first light K-band 7-beam receiver will be exploited to obtain extensive mapping of the ammonia in the galactic star forming regions in close synergy with existing infrared and sub-millimeter continuous surveys of the galactic plane. Another interesting application of the K-band multi-feed receiver is line survey of water lines in nearby galaxies. This will increase the number of detected water masers and derive distances, dynamical models, and total masses matter of the galaxies in the local group. Wideband multi-feed receivers operating at a higher frequency in the range of between 40 and 90 gigahertz currently are in development and will allow us to get access to unique molecular light transitions in our own galaxy, like for example those associated with the deuterated molecules, which are crucial to constrain the kinematic and chemical properties of prestellar cores, as well as to uncover the cool molecular content of the universe in a crucial cosmic interval, redshifts between, let's say, 0.3 and 2, through the mapping of redshift at CO low J transition. Due to an agreement between INAF and the Italian Space Agency on the use of the instrument for space applications, the SRT will also be involved in planetary radar astronomy and space missions.
You mentioned the surface accuracy of the telescope is very important for the high-frequency observations. Is that right?
It is absolutely important, and the aim is to have a surface accuracy which is approximately 20 times less than the minimum wavelength that they want to operate the telescope, which is 3 millimeters. So we aim at getting a surface accuracy of order of 150 microns RMS, corresponding to 20 times less the 3 millimeter wavelength, which is 100 gigahertz operating frequency.
So what happens if the surface accuracy is not sufficient?
Well, the efficiency of the radio telescope will decrease dramatically with RMS errors of the surface. So if we want to have a good efficiency, antenna efficiency, we need to have to keep this RMS of the surface to the lowest possible value.
How do you verify the surface is matched to what is required?
So there are, we have a couple of ways of doing this currently. First, we use photogrammetry, and indeed we run several photogrammetry campaigns during the setting up of the surface for the primary, but also for the secondary mirror. And with the photogrammetry, essentially you take a special camera that and many, many pictures of the surface from different positions, and you can, by putting some reflectors on, attaching some reflectors on the surface that to be analyzed, you can recover the shape and then the RMS of the surface. And for the SRT, the photogrammetry campaigns which were made allow to obtain an RMS of below 300 microns.
That's really astonishing. And it looks like there's a large amount of new methods need to be developed, like sometimes you have a simple method such as a photograph, the surface could be used for even studying the surface accuracy. It's really interesting to know this.
Yes, that's is one of the techniques. There is also another technique that we aiming of applying to the telescope to improve the surface accuracy, which is holography. So we are actually developing a holographic system operating around 11 GHz that will allow to hopefully to set up the primary mirror RMS to within the 150 microns RMS which are required as a specification for the telescope.
It will also be interesting to know how the active system works with the Sardinia Radio Telescope.
Yeah, so one of the most innovative features of the SRT is the active surface that consists of over 1,000 electromechanical actuators which are mounted in a backup structure beneath the primary mirror panel corners and distributed along the radial lines. Its first aim is to reshape the mirror to compensate for the repeatable deformations due to gravity. Exploiting advanced real-time measurements will also correct for wind and thermal effects. And this is something that we want to implement in the near future. So essentially we have actuators, and each actuator moves either upward or downward at the corners of four adjacent panels in direction normal to the local surface with a maximum stroke of plus or minus 15 millimeters. Such a large stroke was required in order to achieve the second aim for this active surface, which is to modify the shape profile back to a surface that is parabolic enough to increase the maximum operating frequency observable from the primary focus.
Also, it will be interesting to know how complex the electronics development for this telescope. Do you get these electronics readily bought from the commercially available technology, or you have to develop in-house?
So, for example, the front ends were completely developed in-house. We have a front end group, which is not located in one single place in Italy, but is actually spread out at least three different institutions. The main one being in Bologna area, together with the one in Florence and in Cagliari, in Sardinia. And we work all together to develop the cryogenic front ends for the different frequency range required for the SRT, but also for the other Italian radio telescope, and also for the international projects.
When you say cryogenic, what is the temperature of operation of these electronics?
So the front ends operate the coldest stage that we use in cryogenic front ends up to for the SRT, which go up to 100 GHz approximately, based on a 15 to 20 Kelvin cryogenic stage. So it's quite a simple cryogenic systems which are commercially available. We develop not the cryogenics, but the components which go into the receivers, like the amplifiers, the feed horn, the optics, cryogenic optics which go into receivers, together with the filtering and all the processing of the which is required in a receiver chain.
Why is it required to cool the devices to such low temperature?
This is because we have one of the target is to have as the lowest possible receiver noise performance for the system. The astronomical signal are extremely weak, so we need to have very low noise in order to detect these signals and decrease the integration time in order to get a reasonably good signal-to-noise ratio for the observations.
Is there any particular good time of the year that is good for operating the Sardinia radio telescope?
Yeah, so it depends on which frequency you are interested in observing. For example, if you are interested in low frequency for us means say a few hundred megahertz or a few gigahertz, the telescope can operate most any time essentially. Also during daytime and also with the cloud, and also with rain at the lowest frequencies like 300 megahertz. But if you are interested in a higher frequency like in the 3 millimeter band, 100 gigahertz, then you need a very good weather conditions, in particular very low water vapor content in the atmosphere. And for these observations at the highest frequencies, it's necessary to have, usually these are run during the winter time, because the atmospheric conditions are better for those observations.
And finally, could you tell us what is the difference between radio telescope as against the normal telescopes where we can use our eyes to see. Why do we need a radio telescope?
Yes, so why? Radio is electromagnetic spectrum, as you know, is a very very broad, and the radio is one of is a low energy, corresponds to the low energy part of the electromagnetic spectrum. Our eyes are sensitive to the radiation coming in the frequency range approximately between 0.5 microns, and this is the typical wavelength of which is for which our eyes are sensitive. But the radio is a much longer wavelength, and this the emissions of radio wavelengths is produced mostly from the cold universe. So if we study, for example, the millimeter waves emissions, we observe objects that emit, which are cold objects. For example, the cold molecular clouds from which stars are being formed. So we need, in order to see the sites of star formations, for example, to observe those frequencies. Because the radiation, millimeter wave radiation, is can go through the interstellar gas and the interstellar dust that prevents the optical emissions to go through, while the radio ones can be detected from us.
Could you tell us about the optical system of the Sardinia radio telescope?
So the SRT optical system is based on a quasi-Gregorian profile with shaping applied to both the primary and the secondary surfaces. The present geometry results from a trade-off between two goals. On one side is we want to minimize the overall system noise temperature, mainly due to spillover, and the other goal is to reduce the standing wave pattern without excessively sacrificing the field of view available from the Gregorian focus.
It will be interesting to know the 64 meter diameter of the telescope, how it will be used at the different frequencies. Is the entire surface used for all the frequencies, or a portion of it?
Not the entire surface will be used at all frequencies, yes.
This is really interesting. Thank you, Dr. Alessandro Navarini. And we are delighted to have you for the interview today. And we look forward to be working with Sardinia Radio Telescope. Thank you.
Thanks.